iconic photo from the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing is a determined man in a cowboy hat pushing a young man in a wheelchair whose legs have been blasted off. Today, that man who was in the wheelchair took the stand. His testimony continued in day two of the federal death penalty trial of Zahar Tsarnaev. Tsarnaev is accused in the 2013 Boston Marathon bombings, which killed three and injured more than 260. This is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. We're at the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston. I'm David Boeri from WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Kevin, it strikes me that yesterday, for opening arguments, the jurors came in like troops hitting the beach for the first time. And yesterday, they encountered some just graphic and horrific testimony. Today, they knew what to expect, I think. They were a lot more sober coming in today, and they got more of the same, didn't they?
Yeah, sticking with that metaphor, they're the Rangers on Normandy Beach the second day, and there's still blood in the water. There was blood in so much of the testimony today. It's actually interesting to watch the pacing of this, the way the prosecution is using. There were a number of technical experts or people that were talking about the way they collected evidence. And then you had a guy like Jeff Bauman, the guy that lost both his legs, the guy who a stranger named Carlos Arredondo in the cowboy hat comes running, that image we all remember. And the extraordinary thing about guy like Jeff Bauman and then later Roseanne Sawyer, the other victim who had lost her leg, amazing humanity, the way they talk, the way they come to life. It isn't this, you know, dry question and answer that you see in a courtroom drama. These people, they're funny, they're moving. In Roseanne's case, she broke down in tears, but she talked about a Northeastern student named Shores Salter who came out of the blue and knelt next to her and basically saved her life, tied off her leg, a total stranger. And so I think the other thing that happened today is much of the pathos and the tragedy that was on there. What came through is these extraordinary stories of first responders and ordinary citizens, ordinary people coming and rising above and saving lives. We always talk in this case about three people dying at the finish line. Today we started to realize how many people lived.
And what I noticed is those jurors loved the witnesses. Roseanne Sawyer is talking about this one moment. She talked about looking down and seeing blood where her knee had been. And then she said she looked up beside her and she saw a foot with a sock on it. And she tried to remember whether she put a sock on that day or not and whether it was hers. People were struggling in the jury. They did not want to show themselves cry, but there were four people. There were four women there, visibly upset.
There was a light moment today, and they're needed given what is going up in terms of this testimony, when Jeff Bauman said that he woke up in the hospital and his best friend John Sullivan was standing there, and he said, "I knew I hadn't died and gone to heaven because Sully was there." And the jurors loved that. The other moment I thought that really emerged today, or at least the theme that emerged, were these horrible Hobson's choices that first responders had to make. You had the cop, Lauren Woods, talking about the situation when she went to the side of Lingzi Liu. She cleared Lingzi Liu's airway so she could continue to breathe. And yet, when they knew she was gone, they brought her on a backboard, and then the paramedics said they needed that to save somebody else. And so they placed Lingzi Liu down, covered her with a sheet. And at that moment, Lauren Woods decided the best thing she could do as a Boston police officer is stay by the side of Lingzi Liu.
And then you had this awful picture of Bill Richard. And you actually, I say picture, not only do you have a mental picture, but you see the photos where he picks up his older son and his daughter who is missing her leg below the knee, and he's carrying them away. His wife is on the ground. He's trying to move them off, and he comes back, and he talks to his wife, "We got to take care of Jane. We got to get her in." And what that says is
He knew
Martin was gone and that they had to move on to the living. And you think, what a terrifying choice for a parent.
The other thing that really struck me during Bill's testimony is he said after it all happened and he was trying to get Jane in the ambulance, he covered Henry's eyes. It was this, you know, instinctive paternal thing that came from somewhere. Clearly, everything was going on around him, and he covered Henry's eyes.
We even had Rebecca Gregory, who was on the stand and moved everybody yesterday with her story of being there, of seeing her bones, her leg bones beside her and wanting to reach out to her crying child and to realize she didn't have hands, that they were shattered and she couldn't do it. She was in the audience today listening. The defense is in a difficult position.
I think that's putting it mildly. I don't know what they do at this point other than just sit back. And clearly, David, they are aware of the sensitivities at play because right before the afternoon session started, David Brook, one of Yohar Tsarnaev's lawyers, rose and told the judge that they were concerned about some of the tactics that the prosecution was using, particularly the introduction of the Iraq conflict, in which they said was irrelevant. And yet David Brook acknowledged that they are reluctant to get up there and make an objection in front of the jury.
Oh, they can't do it.
Because they know what they will look like.
It was interesting, though, that you had Lauren Woods, the police officer, talking about staying with Lindsay Liu and why she stayed. And then she said, my cousin was killed in the war in Iraq. At that point, the prosecutors themselves turned and looked at their fellow prosecutor like, you're crossing the line. And at that point, the defense was whispering to each other because they were offended. They saw this going in that direction. And now we're talking about Iraq. I don't think anybody mentioned Afghanistan, but the judge warned them later on. Afghanistan, Iraq, you obviously come down to Muslims, and then suddenly you're in that category, and it's going to be terribly prejudicial.
But clearly, this was the first time I saw the judge so clearly side with the defense. He agreed with the defense and said Iraq and Afghanistan should not be mentioned in this trial until it's relevant, and that's when they start talking about the computer files that indicate that Yohar Tsarnaev was radicalized.
But he didn't balance things, actually, from what he ruled yesterday, which is going to be a devastating ruling, because yesterday, as you know, he argued that the defense can't talk about the older brother, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the radicalized jihadi. He's the one that we know that the defense is going to blame for bringing his younger brother, his younger and adoring brother, along with him. And so the defense has been, and we heard that in the open yesterday, that in fact Tamerlan was responsible for that. Tamerlan's dead. The prosecution, I thought, pointedly stated yesterday, Shahar drove over his brother and was responsible for killing his brother as he was trying to get away from the cops and run them down. So now they're being stripped from any kind of defense that they were going to offer here during the guilt phase. And what do?
Well, the defense desperately wants to bring Tamerlan back to life in the courtroom. Judge O'Toole says he will not let that happen, at least until the penalty phase. And we know we are going to have a penalty phase.
That's right. I mean, there's absolutely no chance the defense is going to get a not guilty here.
You know, the last image of today that both the jurors and we were left with was Bill Richard sitting there. And after he had recounted just an unimaginable loss, the loss of his 8-year-old son, the loss of the leg of his 6-year-old daughter at the time, his wife blinded in an eye, his son Henry absolutely traumatized, the prosecutor just asked him to recount his own injuries. And Bill seemed almost embarrassed to have to sit there and talk about what had happened to him. But he ended it by saying that his ears were the things most damaged, and that he has, you know, his hearing is not what it used to be, he said. He said, I can still hear the beautiful voices of my family.
I'm David Boeri from WBUR.
I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Join us again next week as testimony continues.
Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing Trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at bostonglobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.